Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you behind the scenes with the stars and creators of the hottest shows on Broadway and beyond. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Andy Carl, the Broadway favorite from roles including the UPS guy, who's the recipient of the Bend and Snap in Legally Blonde, the underdog boxer, who's the title character in Rocky, and most recently, the weatherman who repeats the same day over and over again in Groundhog Day. He's now back on Broadway in Pretty Woman, the new musical based on the 1990 romantic comedy, and he's in the studio with me to tell us all about it. Hey, Andy. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Gordon. Thanks for having me.
So, first of all, how's your knee? You know, you heard it about a year ago, and it was a big deal.
This is the number one question that happens at stage doors now.
I have to imagine.
Yeah.
And what do you tell
actually,
them?
Actually, it's like anybody that like recognizes me between, you know, 42nd and 43rd Street between 7th and Broadway, which outside of there, no one recognizes me. I get the question. How's the knee? And the knee's great. I had surgery in Thanksgiving last year, so under a year of recovery, and I'm dancing on the stages of Broadway.
Yeah. We should say for the listeners who maybe aren't aware of exactly what we're talking about, last year, which surprises me that it was only last year, but in Groundhog Day, it was the middle of a critic's performance, and Andy hurt himself pretty bad, but then went on. I saw you on opening night. So
you saw opening night.
You were in it.
I wrapped it up and came back out there because the show must go on. Which, you know, big thing that was one line that stuck in my head a lot, and also champions adjust, which I now have tattooed on my arm. became like a big mantra for Groundhog Day. It started as something else. It was because our set broke and we had to do one of the performances. We did it live in front of everybody, but we had no set. We just sat there and went through the material, and it people loved it. I think it was our first preview.
The response was huge to that,
and it really established that the material stands on its own. And Groundhog Day, you know, I truly believed in, and it was actually on as it is on television all the time. It was on last night, and I had to turn it off. I got emotional. Yeah. Because of the injury, the champions adjust, the material, it means so much to me. It was interesting. It's like, now I can't watch the movie without getting a little misty-eyed.
Yeah. And so, did the knee prevent you from doing anything on that? I feel like I cut you off
I was heading there. It wasn't until the second to last day of shooting. I always find the perfect times to re-injure myself.
Sure.
Where I was running and thinking I had all the confidence in the world, and then I took a nice turn in this building, and I re-injured my knee as I'm shooting one of the last, you know, 2 days of shooting. luckily, the injury already happened, so it wasn't as severe as when it was in Groundhog Day where I couldn't walk. So I wrapped it up again, and I shot the last 2 days. And this movie had a lot of, like, four-page monologues, things like that. So it was really interesting to, like, here I am again going through this esoteric idea of, like, finding who you are in this life and then having the injury and having to conquer over it again. And just like, okay, this is stupid. I should probably get it, you know, get surgery. Right. So I did directly after the movie.
And so now can you do anything you would have done otherwise? Did it prevent you from
doing
anything?
Yeah, but I'm smarter. My brain is now adjusted to be like, why don't you not jump over that and, you know, try to land really cool and, you know, why not? Don't jump off that fence. Right. My brain is a little smarter now. So, but I do have, it's all better. I'm whole as a sense. Somebody died, gave me an ACL. Right. And now I have someone's, you know, some dead person's ACL in my leg, which I find very interesting as well.
Yeah. There's no jumping off fences in Pretty Woman.
There isn't. There's jumping off of benches and there's dancing. And I'm doing a lot of, like, you know, little things here and there, but I'm certainly not killing myself every night physically. I think what matters most is, you know, making sure that, you know, the audience falls in love with the story.
Right. Speaking of Pretty Woman, which opened just recently, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
The show had a tryout in Chicago, but you were not in it.
I wasn't there.
When did you get involved?
I got involved in July, which was, you know, I started rehearsals very quickly. There was, as shows do, they've had different Edwards and Vivians in workshops and rehearsals and in Chicago, and now it's like it's finally on Broadway. It's sort of setting this, and as it will go on to tours and to all that other stuff, there will be more Vivian and Edwards. I'm the, I don't know, maybe the fifth or sixth Edward that there was.
What did you think of the idea? Were you excited about it?
Because my wife is playing Kit DeLuca in the show, Orfe.
Right.
I was already a fan of the show.
So you'd seen it, right?
I'd seen workshops. I had, you know, seen the out-of-town run in Chicago. And I was like, great, honey, this is amazing. You're going to have a great time. Enjoy your run. I had never even took it on as something that I would do. I heard rumors back in maybe like a year ago that they were talking about, you know, they wanted to have me come in for it or, you know, read with somebody. And I just, schedules didn't work out that way. And I never, you know, put myself in that position. And then all of a sudden, I get the call from Jerry Mitchell, the director of Pretty Woman.
Also the director of Legally Blonde.
Also the director. So we had known each other. We're friends. That's kind of the thing that sold me, because, like, when, you know, somebody like that who's got so many hits under his belt and also just a really good person and does good work sort of asks you if I could come along or would I be interested, and then all the things started lining up, like, oh, my wife is also in this show. Gary Marshall and I worked together years ago at the Falcon Theater, his theater in Burbank.
On what?
Happy Days.
Oh.
The musical.
Yes.
Yeah, I took over for Joey McIntyre,
as the Fonz,
New Kids,
I'm guessing. Yeah, sure.
As the Fonz. Yes. I was the Fonz for a little bit, which, you know, it's so odd to look at the things that I've done and say I was the Fonz and or Rocky and now Edward Lewis. So that lined up. I knew the Marshall family. They had come and seen me in different shows over the years. Brian Adams, you know, not so shabby, Jim Vallance writing these huge hits, and I was just, and also I had just shot a pilot that didn't get picked up, and it was the day after I had not gotten picked up when Jerry called, and I was like, this is great, this is actually lining up to be the perfect thing. So I was happy. I think the next step was just a matter of me going, what can I bring? And I had this very unique perspective of seeing the show and knowing the show before I got in it, and therefore I could make a lot of very great, good judgment calls on what this character needed in order to tell the story.
What did the character need in order to tell the story?
Well, you needed them to fall in love at the end. It's the biggest part of the show for me. It was the culmination of, like, well, how do you get to that journey of them falling in love? And you see, and that takes chemistry. Takes a huge amount of chemistry, which I thought Richard Gere and Julia Roberts had in the movie, which is paramount to the film. I thought it makes the film you know, 50% of what it is. Great writing and how it all lands and the story being what it is. If they don't have chemistry, you don't care. And I just wanted to make sure that Samantha Barks, who plays Vivian, and I got along really well and could joke and could have a good time, because there's going to be those moments on stage where we need, the audience needs to believe that we actually like each other and want to fall in love, and also big gestures of love. There's a moment at the end of the show that it's really like the breakdown of Edward Lewis and let's go of all the things that are holding on, that he's holding on to in his life or holding back from, and giving her this giant gesture that the audience can enjoy and also that I enjoy very much. There's little pinpoints throughout the film, throughout the musical, that I wanted to make sure the audience sees in order to earn the end, which is beautiful.
What surprised you about the musical's take on the story, and what do you think surprises audiences about it? That feels, because it is, in many ways, very faithful to the film.
Yeah, it's very, very faithful to the film, and I think I don't think you can get around that. I think this particular musical needs all the elements, needs the dress, it needs the necklace, it needs certain lines. And doing shows like Groundhog Day and Rocky, I know there's certain things that you need throughout the piece to remind people of how much they love it. So you're working on a part of the brain that's nostalgic. What I believe this show provides more of, and I think it's kind of elemental to what makes it great now in the hashtag Me Too moments of, you know, women empowerment, and also not, and making sure that it's never the woman is never sort of out of control. It is in her control. And I think what this musical does is provides the lead woman character, and also the second lead woman character, played by my wife, a sense of...
Who plays Vivian's best friend.
Exactly. They discover and honor their dream and their independence and their ability to live this life in a way that they don't have to be sort of shackled down with the choices that they made. They can make the change for themselves and become stronger. And it's never the man that they need to make that change. That's love is the big thing that makes them end up together. But she doesn't need him. She can save him right back, which she says at the end of the show. And I think this musical, and with Bryan Adams' music, really hones in on that. And I love that about this show.
This is Bryan Adams, of course, of Everything I Do It For You and Summer of 69. Did you know his music?
I know his music? Yeah, I mean, look, I was there in the 90s and 80s, and I heard his music a lot around the pool when I was, you know, swimming with my friends back in Baltimore. I was at my prom, I'm pretty sure. I can't remember what songs were there, but I'm sure that was part of the playlist. I think that was probably the most scary thing for me. It's like, here's this guy who's got 15 Grammys and, you know, endless gold and platinum records and still producing and touring and knows how to write songs that grab the world, which is astounding. I love it. And he's got a certain style, and you can hear his sort of voice throughout the show and in this music. And he's great at sort of like power love ballads, which is great for Pretty Woman.
Sure.
It really fits. So he and Jim Vallance just, I think, wrote a tremendous score that I love. And I could go on and on, because when I saw the Out of Town Runs in the workshop, there was a song that was in that's called Freedom, which I sing in the show, but they had cut it in Chicago. And I was like, wait a minute, why did they cut that song? It was probably the most important song for Edward. And for me,
it's basically an I Want number,
yeah,
right?
And yeah. It's also a discovery of he's changing and he believes he can change, but how far will it go? And I thought it was so perfect for, you know, Edward as a character. And there's nothing more powerful to me, I don't know, than seeing, you know, a man at a piano having a feeling by himself in his own world.
Do you play piano?
I do play piano. Yeah. Which
are you playing piano on the stage?
Of course I am.
I didn't. Just curious.
Always. I also drank raw eggs every night.
That's what I figured.
I'm also a newscaster. I do play piano, though, but that's just being part of it. It's like I know the feeling of that. I know how to emotionally sort of let myself into a piano, into the music. It's, you know, this is what I do for a living, but it's also very powerful for anyone who has that. So I think that was the biggest thing for me is being able to prove myself to Brian and Jim on this type of music, which is pop rock, and it sounds very much like their voice, and it's also something that's in my lexicon in the back of my head of like, don't screw this up because this is a generation, your generation, you know, listening to this.
Right.
And so when that song Freedom had been cut, I was upset just as an audience member, but also like when I was offered the job, I was like, I need to talk to them about this song. This is actually going to be his moment, and it's not like this huge big song. It's just about discovery of emotions. And so I was talking to Jim Valance about the lyrics, and I'm like, little old me telling a guy who's got all, you know, platinum records under his arm, I was like, can the beginning of the song needs to be this? It needs to be a discovery of what he's feeling in this moment, because this is how his journey is going to start here to get to the end of the show. And after, you know, maybe 15 minutes of chatting with him, and I took a deep breath afterwards, and then he came back with this great beginning new lyric the next day, and I was like, wow, I just collaborated with, you know, some of the biggest, you know, icons of our time as far as music goes.
You've alluded to this, that you and musicals based on movies are very familiar with each other.
Yes.
What's your relationship to films once you get on board one of these projects? Like, are you, I'm never going to look at that movie while I'm working on this? Like, how do you think about, I mean, in so many cases, these iconic performances and how your performance is in conversation with them?
I know, it's sort of like the job comes up and then you're like, I have to see this movie. I have to see what the heck it's like, you know, what everybody's writing at.
Right.
And you also understand that different writers will approach it in different ways. And you sort of have to like put yourself in the tone of whoever's writing the script for the musical. I've been fortunate enough in, you know, Pretty Woman and also Groundhog Day to have the writer from the movie be a part of it.
Right.
And that cuts both ways as well. It's like, how much of their own material are they going to cut or change? How much are they going to build on? What are they going to add to the show? So there's that sensitive little play about how that's going to work out. But, you know, it's sort of out of my hands as far as, you know, what they want in the show. Luckily, I was able to talk to J.F. Lawton, who wrote Pretty Woman, about Edward and like, what can we establish that happens in four scenes and put it in one, and how right. How can we make that work? I think that's the big thing, is like, go right back to the text, see what's going on. All the movie images are flashing through my head as I'm watching it, but then you have to really consider putting it in your own, you know, how you respond to this as an actor. How do I respond to being this jerk, or being, you know, being a mogul, or being someone who has to fall in love? It has to be emotionally gratifying for yourself in order to play it, because if you're just going to play it exactly like they did in the movie, it's not going to generate any feelings from the audience. They're going to be like, oh, that's very nice, he said the lines. So if I can give it a little bit more weight of who I am or how I respond to the material on top of what I know is nostalgia, then it can become much more powerful, and it can become a development of like, we see something through that actor that we didn't see through the actor in the film, but isn't that great for the audience to see, like, oh, this is what he meant, or does it mean more to him on stage than it does to the film actor? It's really interesting to watch.
You mentioned you're in the show with your wife, but although you stand next to each other in the curtain call, are you ever on stage together?
Never.
Other than that? You're not,
never,
right?
Never.
Yeah.
Barely backstage as well. When she's
okay.
on stage,
you're backstage.
I'm off stage.
Yeah.
When I'm on, she's off. We literally, I think the closest we have in the show is she's sitting on a bench that's coming out, and I'm on a bed with some other woman going off. So it's, that's, we pass, you know, like ships through the night in the show.
But you guys have worked together before. You worked together in Legally Blonde, and you met on Saturday Night Fever.
Met
is that
on
right?
Saturday Night Fever, yep. Yeah.
Right. Do you enjoy working together?
That, I mean, it's like paid vacation. It's just it's so much easier to get the schedules done. That's really it. It's like we have our lives together. Like we went to the vet this morning. So that's, that was our big, like, cool thing. We were on a boat. So it was amazing.
If you were to dream cast the two of you as the leads of a romantic comedy musical, real or imagined, based on a film or not, what would it be?
Well, there was, I mean, Annie Get Your Gun is, you know, seems right because, you know, she's, I mean, like, Ethel Merman played Annie originally. She's, and Orpheus got the chops, like the big rock chops. She's not an Ethel Merman, like, style huge Roberto singer, but she's a big personality and she's got a huge voice.
Right.
And, you know, Frank Butler, I actually played that at an encore, so I was like, this is actually a show that would be kind of nice.
Right.
Other than that, I was like, there's Bedazzled, the movie. I don't know if you ever saw that with Brendan Fraser. And,
Is he the devil? Okay.
Yeah. And I would love to play that because he plays a whole bunch of different characters. They both like play off of each other and have a whole bunch of different characters.
Has it gotten to the point where you watch movies and think, oh, this would be a good, good
great,
musical?
Great that
I, yeah. No.
I mean, that's the one that sticks out. And she loves Satan. I mean, that's just, she talks about Satan all the time.
Right.
She's not
right.
a worshiper or anything. Yeah. She's like, I think it's pretty cool. So I was like, great. That'd be a good one.
Do you and your wife have a policy about reviews? Actors are always different about reviews. And how they
I've never really made a policy of reviews. I kind of like, but it's an interesting thing. Okay, so Groundhog Day, I've never read reviews, London and New York. I've never read such glowing reviews before, especially about myself. And I was like, like, I wasn't walking around with a chip on my shoulder or anything, but, like, I put in the work to make this, you know, this thing work, and I knew the show was really great, and just five stars all the way across, Olivier Award, this is amazing. And then when we get to New York, and there's great reviews here, and we just couldn't get audiences to come see it. And it blew my mind. It made me very sad, but it's, like, it's really interesting. Pretty Woman has gotten reviews that are really good or they're not so good. It's a little all over the place, based on the fact that, like, we do a lot of nostalgia for the movie, which I think is a huge plus for this show. I think if you strip away, if you don't have the red dress and if you don't have the tuxes and if you don't do the opera scene and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, I think are getting critically looked at it, or they're being hailed, it's very strange.
Right.
It's very up and down with the show. And we're doing very well because the title's so big. So reviews to me have lessened in value from, you know, a year ago to now. It's like, what do they really mean? They're just...
In terms of how a show's going to do.
In terms of how a show's going to do or how it's received and what the audience is going to grab. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm a little bitter about it, but it's like really, it's really interesting. I'm almost like... It's like a test in my head of like, okay, so this is what reviews mean or how they'll take a show. It doesn't really have any effect on it. It's a matter of like how people respond to the show. And Pretty Woman, people love this musical a lot. The audiences are having a great time, and I'm having a great time in it too. So it's kind of like, I was like, I don't even care. Like, let's just open the show. It's going to be fine because there's a lot of love happening and people are responding to it and telling their friends. And that's going to be the word of mouth is going to be huge for the show.
And so you're in this, you're in Pretty Woman for the foreseeable future. And you mentioned the film that you will go back and record some.
Yeah, Far Away Eyes.
Film some scenes for. Just, yeah. Is there a timeline for when that'll be released or how they want to do it?
I have no idea. Yeah. It's like, I guess movies take about a year to get, you know, edited and cut and put back in and
got to find some distribution and all that stuff.
Yeah, stuff like that. And it's an indie film, so I don't even know how long we're talking.
Right.
So,
right.
It was just a great idea as far as being written, and I'm looking forward to it coming out. So anything I can do to push that, Far Away Eyes, it's going to be a great film.
And what else is on your plate that we should know about? Anything?
Anything coming up? No, that was the cool thing. That's kind of why I took the job. I was like, I had shot this film, and then I shot a pilot. It was like things were just like boom, 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 and then Jerry offered this job, and I was like, oh, let's do this, let's just try it. I sort of have the value or the luck, I should say, of things coming to me. As far as this goes, who knows what's going to happen after Pretty Woman? We'll see what happens. I just know I wanted to play. I wanted to play a billionaire, like that. One of the leading man, romantic billionaire lead, which is something I hadn't done before. It's something that also scares me a little. I think of like romantic male leads, I don't gravitate to normally because it's something I see myself as more like the featured comedian or Rocky's blue collar.
I was going to say Rocky.
So I think I just needed to make a decision to play a true romantic lead. And I'm having this amazing time with it because I'm discovering the fact that, like, there's so much lying underneath this character that I'm really enjoying. And I'm enjoying being able to break him of his Edward Lewis rich guy rules at the end.
That was Andy Carl, now starring in Pretty Woman at Broadway's Nederlander Theater. If you like what you've heard on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes and subscribe wherever finer podcasts are dispensed. On the next episode of Stagecraft, I talk to playwright Teresa Rebeck and actor Janet McTeer about their new Broadway comedy steeped in theater history, Bernhard Hamlet. Until then, see you at the theater.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.